So when I used to take my friends' kids, I mean, and all my friends in America with their kids, they would always be, you know what, it's okay, to not bring home the gold, but do try. Where in England, we have this attitude where it's not about winning, it's about taking part.
Did you win the egg race, Colin?
I won the egg race, yeah, I did. not because the egg was stuck to the spoon either. I actually legit won it because I had, you know, this format of using my brain and to really concentrate on that spoon and that egg, yeah.
That's fantastic. Hey, hey, you found us. This is Grooming Unleashed, where we learn and talk about the ins and outs of the pet grooming industry. From pro groomers and salon owners to show hosts and dog handlers, we'll jump into the stressful and crazy stories of the day-to-day operations of the crazy world of grooming. I'm your host, Ryan Alvarez. Our podcast is sponsored by Loyalty Pet Products. Loyalty Pet Products provides quality grooming tools and accessories at an affordable price. From shears to stripping knives to smocks and hammocks, Loyalty Pet Products has an essential tool to fit your expectation and style. Use code UNLEASHED to save 10% today. Loyalty Pet Products, uniquely designed, beautifully priced. This is Ryan Alvarez with Grooming Unleashed. This is episode 12, and our guest today has not only authored the book, What Would Colin Do? 101 Situations and Solutions for Every Dog Groomer, but he has been around the world as a groomer, speaker, and judge. He won International Groomer of the Year in 2004. He's a multi-year member of Groom Team USA, as well as Groom Team Scotland. He was the winner of the 2006 World Cup Grooming Games, and he's won countless Best in Show and Best All-Around Groomer Awards. Been on the cover of Groomer to Groomer 5 times. And many, many more accolades. You can see him on TV for the hit show Pooch Perfect. Without further ado, I give you Colin Taylor. Hey, everybody. This is Ryan Alvarez with Grooming Unleashed. This is episode 12, and we have a very special guest with us today, Colin Taylor. Colin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good, considering. We're in the midst of this pandemic, so I'm assuming that you're in the UK right now?
Yes, I am, and we're in coming up to our 6th week of lockdown.
Yeah, same here in the United States. We live in Florida, and I know that we definitely decided to shut our grooming shop down even before it was mandated, just because we have a lot of older clients, and we just, at that time, we just assumed it was more for senior citizens, which obviously it's taken on a whole life form of its own. So.
Absolutely. I think it's safe to, take every risk assessment and just, put that to rest. And so you take care of everybody. And plus you have children.
Correct.
Also, so you have to think about everybody.
Correct. Colin, I had a chance to kind of do some research, as I like to do with some of my guests before they come on, and somebody can make a movie based on your life, I think.
They could. I would hope it might be more exciting than Joe Exotic about the Tigers, but I don't know. I think he's got me down as being a drama.
Well, I don't think we're going to see you in jail anytime soon. So I think we're good to go on that. What I mean by that is, I just, at the age of 16, it was kind of like you already had your heart set on grooming. Is that correct?
I never ever wanted to be a dog groomer. I wanted to study gorillas and I wanted to be a primatologist. That was my dream. However, I hated school. I do not promote hating school to children. I tell them that they should study. However, I found it very difficult. I didn't enjoy the academic side of things. I'm totally practical. I love to create things and make things. And I've always had a respect for all animals, but I've had a very a huge respect for primates and monkeys, and I love them. And but you need a biology degree, and because I didn't like school, I didn't have that degree. So I worked in a pet shop, and I worked there as a Saturday and Sunday kid, as they call it in England. And a woman came in and bought nail clippers and told me she was a dog groomer. And I went home and talked to my mum and dad. And grooming school back then in 1985 was like in dollars, about $800. And I said to my mum and dad if I could borrow the money. Mm-hmm. And they said yes, but I'd have to pay it back to them and work every Sunday at the pet shop and give them the money. And I think I gave them the money back. I'm not too sure, actually, to be fair.
they might want to check up on that.
I know, exactly. And then it went from there. And then I enjoyed it. I love the creativity side of grooming, styling. And but I love people too. I'm not going to be a cliche and say I became a dog groomer because I hate people. I love people equally.
Mm-hmm. So you went to the you went to the London Academy of Grooming.
And I was told.
Go ahead. I was going to say your instructor was Jill East. So tell us about that experience, because it seemed like she saw something in you right away.
Well, yeah, she, I was a shy kid, and I was extremely shy, no matter how many much people don't believe me. I was a shy kid, and I remember the grooming school was above a pet shop called Fish, Fur and Feather, which was close to Heathrow Airport. And I got on the bus to go to school, and which was like a 45-minute bus journey. And I remember sitting upstairs for like registration, you know, for the for when they all the students meet each other and then they meet their teacher. And this woman came up the stairs, and she was very, very typical British. Very upfront, very kind of, you know, a bossy woman. And she kind of, I'm not too sure. I mean, she took me under her wing. She saw something in me. I found certain things very natural and very easy. I hated doing poodle feet, so she gave me more poodle feet to groom. But she kind of really pushed me. And I still talk to her to this day.
And did she ever kind of give you insight as to like what she did see in you to kind of push you?
No, she came in one day and she said to me, I just to let you know, I've entered you into a grooming competition, and I hadn't even finished grooming school, and I did a clipped Cairn Terrier, and I actually got first place with it. And I remember the picture. I can't find it. It's a black and white picture, and it was a brindle, Cairn Terrier. And when I think about it now, I think the dog looked absolutely amazing. If I actually found the picture, I'll be like, oh my god. But black and white, I think black and white pictures makes anything look good, to a point. So but I was pleased, and I was I was close to 16. I'm not too sure. Very close to 16 years old at that point.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I definitely agree with the whole, you know, the vintage look of the pictures. And, you know, you're not that old, Colin. So you keep saying like you're thinking way back, and these black and white photos as if we didn't have any color ink at that time.
I know, exactly.
When you graduated from the Grooming Academy, you mm-hmm. had an unbelievable opportunity to go to Hong Kong for 2 years. And can you kind of take us through that, please?
Yeah, sure. So there was a lady called Mary Ng. Her last name is spelled NG, and she owns the Hong Kong Doggy House. And she was a student also of Jill's. Jill was at international school. She taught more international people probably than English people. And anyway, Mary fell pregnant. And normally in Hong Kong, when you have a baby, the baby goes right to a Vietnamese nanny, and the nanny takes care of the baby, and you go back to work. But Mary was kind of westernized, and she wanted to spend a little time with the baby and take some time off work. Her husband was Chinese Canadian, and he was a lawyer. And so she wanted to have somebody come over and work with the two girls who run the Hong Kong Doggy House. So Jill thought about me, and I went home and said to my mum and dad, could I do it? And my mum and dad said, yeah, go for it. And I'm thinking, okay, does my mum and dad actually love me? Why do they want me to go? Just whatever, go for it. But they said...
they want their $800 back.
Yeah, really. I think that's probably why. But I think plus they, you know, they wanted me to grow also as a person, because I was still kind of a shy person. I had a really bad stutter. And I think they wanted me to push me harder also. And I think it was one of them things where it was good for me mentally, they thought. And it was. It helped me develop. I probably learned more about life and respect than anything in Hong Kong than what I did ever at school, because school teaches you math, English, whatever. Hong Kong taught me the fact of if you have money, you're American or English, and you live on Hong Kong side in a massive house on the hill. And if you're not, you live in Kowloon and you are literally scraping around the streets for garbage to collect to make money or whatever. And you really do see a lot of, you know, poverty and all that kind of stuff, at least what I can remember in my head. And they're the things I can remember.
Have you been back there since?
You know what? I haven't. And me and my partner, we flew into there in November when I was going to Australia. And I arranged it a little bit better, I would have wanted to stop there. But the protests, there's lots of protests there right now. Mm-hmm. So we were advised not to stop there. Okay. But I do want to go back there, because when I was living there, it was owned by the English. Now it's owned by China. And I've talked to a lot of my friends, and yes, it's a communist country now, but still, it's still a beautiful country. I really want to go there and see, go to the places where I visited when I was 17 years old, because now I'm the age I'm at, there's so many things which you don't appreciate. Like I went to the Forbidden City and saw the terracotta soldiers, and I saw the Great Wall of China. And you know what? I didn't appreciate, because when you're young, you're like, whatever. Mm-hmm. You take a photo image in your head. It's like, you know, but I'm still like that now. It's like, you put me in front of the Grand Canyon, I'll stand there and be like, okay, what's next? You know, I mean, you know, I should take things in a little bit more, which is one thing I have to learn to do.
Well, I think, I mean, if anything that this pandemic is teaching anybody, it's just to not take things for granted, for sure. I mean, it's...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, my wife and I, we decided, my father passed away unexpectedly in 2015, and he had all these intentions to retire, and he never got to do a lot of things that he wanted to do. And that immediately I put into motion taking a family European trip, because why wait? And I'm really thankful that I did now, because now we have a second child and things mm-hmm. are just going to get harder. But so yeah, I'll get into that, because you've definitely traversed the world quite a bit with your speaking and teaching. So okay. So in 1989, you met Dina Perry.
I met Dina Perry, yeah.
And so I'll let you kind of go into detail a little bit about that. But I'm really curious to know about these Madonna posters that you packed, because I read that you didn't have a lot to pack, but those Madonna posters apparently were pretty essential.
I mean, you know, that is weird, because it's so true. And but I went to a competition, it was the Worlds, it was the groom team competition, and it was held at the Castle Hotel in Windsor. Which is right opposite Windsor Castle, beautiful location. And I met all the American team, Terry DiMarino, Dina Perry, Vivian Nash, John Nash, he was still alive then. I mean, incredible people. Mm-hmm. Lynn Carver, Lizpool, all these incredible groomers. And, you know, I had not been home that long, and I was, you know, I had that I wanted that urn to be able to, the yearning to leave again. I, you know, because I was, I guess it gave me that free spirit kind of feeling where I just wanted to travel a little bit more. So anyway, I competed and I did the individual class, and Vivian Nash came up to me and talked to me, and so did Terry, and they said, oh my God, you know what, your scissoring is just breathtaking. You got to work on your shape, but you know, hey, I'd only been grooming for like 3.5 years then. And Dina Perry offered me a job, and then the next thing I know, I'm on a plane going to Detroit. And I'm a huge Madonna fan. I still am a Madonna fan. You know, I love her music, but more than anything, I like powerful people. I like people that do push people's buttons. I love people that come. I mean, the woman went to New York City with $38, and now she's probably one of the richest women in the world. And you either love her or you hate her, but you have to give her credit for longevity of being in the industry for over 30 years. Anyway, so cut a long story short, I get on the plane, and back then I flew Pan Am, because Pan Am was very, very cheap, not because they were just cheap. They were cheap because they had the Lockerbie bombing over Scotland. And so they, it was really, really cheap flying back then because of that disaster, which is really, really sad. But anyway, I flew Pan Am with my suitcase and my bag of Madonna posters and Madonna calendars, because she was like, I can't leave without all this crap I had on my wall in my bedroom, which my parents were probably thinking, thank God he's taken all that with him. But yeah, so I went back and forth a couple of times to Michigan, and you know, and it shows how ignorant I was, because when you're a kid and you go to America, you go to two places, Florida or California. And because my parents worked for British Airways, we went to Florida and California a lot. Mm-hmm. So when I landed into Michigan in February, I was thinking, what the hell is with all this snow? Why is this? Why? Where am I? I thought I'd got on the wrong plane. I thought maybe I was in another country, not America, because you just don't think of that. And obviously, Dina Perry picked me up. And she scared the hell out of me, because Dina Perry is a powerhouse in this industry. And back then, you know, she's a go-getter, man. She can turn crap into credible, and she is very, very smart in what she does. And I have all the respect for her now. Back when I was younger and she was working me like a dog, I thought she was the worst person in the world. But that's what happens, isn't it? When you are a young person and you got a job and you think people are working you too hard, when in reality, what Dina was doing is she was making sure you had a job and she had a business. You know, so I have all the respect for her. She's amazing.
Yeah, I definitely, as far as, you know, the keeping the standards up for the employees, I know we're a different generation. So I know that's something that we own a grooming shop. So it's definitely something that we see with the employees that we have to try to keep their standards up. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So now when you went to America, did you have any intentions of staying for as long as you did?
You know what, I that was my goal. I wanted to go there. I wanted to gain experience. Obviously, I can go to America for, if you don't have a green card, you can visit America as a visitor and stay there for 3 months. So I thought, well, I'll go there for 3 months and I'll go to a couple of the shows, and we did it. So it was around the time of the All American Grooming Show, and I wanted to make sure that it was for me. And Dina picked me up, and then she owned the Michigan School of Canine Cosmetology. And there was 3 apartments above it, so she let me stay in one of the apartments above the school. And And that, once again, was a growing experience because I didn't know anybody. And I, you know, I got to know people really fast and got to make a lot of friends. And I went to the All-American Grooming Show that Jerry Schimberg used to run. And he, what an amazing person he is. He was the first person that put on a creative competition. I can't remember the year. But this year was in 1989 when I went to his show. And it was just spectacular. It was because he put so much into it. And also, it was the first time I'd ever been to a show that was held at a hotel. So not only did you have a competition, but you had the networking, you had the partying, you had the fun. You know, there was a whole bunch of these extra things put into the mix. And I'd never experienced that before. And after that, that's when I just said, you know what? I want to grow as a person. I want to learn as much as I can as a groomer, and I want to stay. So that's when we went through Dina helping me with all the paperwork for immigration.
And that, how old were you around that time?
I was 19 years old.
So you were still just a kid. So
yeah.
So now when you're at that age and you've already been to Hong Kong, you obviously know that you are kind of a rising star in the industry. What is something that kept you grounded? I know that you said Dina was really hard on you as far as like keeping your standards up and making sure that you were working hard. But what was it that like internally really kept you grounded to where you just didn't assume things were going to come to you easily?
First of all, I didn't even know at that time. First of all, I'm really, you know, when people say to me, oh my God, I mean, it's like a Crufts dog show. I'll be sitting there and I can hear somebody say, oh my God, is that Colin Taylor? And for me, I mean, me and Coleman laugh at it because it doesn't make sense to me. I'm nowhere. I don't believe. I have a hard time with B-listed celebrities in the first place, let alone with people thinking, but I'm anything but a good dog groomer or a good educator. I'm happy with that. So back in the day, I never said to myself, I want to be well known in the industry. I want to be respected by lots of people. I just said to myself, I want to be the best dog groomer I can possibly be. And competing really helped me because I didn't even know I wanted to compete until I did compete. And then I got the bug to do it more because also it wasn't about just competing. It was about this second family that I was having, which is the industry, which is Terry DiMarino and all these people that they weren't just peers of mine. They were family because we saw them on a regular basis. So, you know, it was, I mean, I'm, and when it comes to the hard work, I wanted to work really hard in my education side of grooming. I thought about that totally different as going to work every day and having to wake up and teach students or to get in the grooming van and groom dogs. That was, you know, I mean, I was just your typical grumpy little kid that didn't want to go to work. But when it came to wanting to perfect a poodle trim or a Bichon trim or hand stripping, which I don't really still like still, but I wanted to do that. So I really wanted to excel in that. So that pushed me. And Dina was incredible in making sure that all her employees, if they didn't compete, they would go to shows to learn.
Okay. Now when you're kind of going through the process and you have your instructors, this is not a scripted question. I just made me think of it right now. When you were going to these competitions at that time, was there a groomer in the ring that you constantly kept looking at saying, I hope to be like this person?
Yeah. Well, it was Liz Paul, you know, because Liz Paul was the person. Liz Paul is like the Lindsay Dickin of today.
Gotcha.
So Liz Paul was the person that you had to beat. And if you did beat her, you had a ride. But then again, there was Liz Paul in the ring. There was Terry DiMarino in the ring. There was Kathy Rhodes in the ring. You know, there was Melissa LaPlanc in the ring. There was all these people that were your bigwigs, your A-listers, and they're the people that if you beat any of these people, you knew you had then been promoted into. I hate calling it a click because I don't like that, but it's you're there. You're accepted into their group kind of thing. I still don't even like that kind of saying like that, but you understand what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, because people hang out with people which they can relate to and which they think are on their level. Mm-hmm. And my God, I was still young. I mean, I didn't think I was on anybody's level because with me, it was about, you know, smoking cigarettes and, you know, drinking Jack Daniels and all that kind of stuff. And not to say that I had a problem with either or, but I was your typical, you know, I was coming out of my shell. I was learning things about myself. You know, in America, I made all my mistakes in America and I grew up in America. It taught me all the bad things I did in America and all the good things I did in America. I mean, so, you know, it taught me so much.
Yeah. In terms of the competition process right now, how do you feel that we can maybe fix the limited availability of spots? Because I know that there's, you know, one of the things that I promoted when I first started this is to get people to compete. Mm-hmm. And so now what I'm getting from some feedback is that it's really hard to be able to find a spot because they fill up so quickly. Do you have any solution to that moving forward?
Oh my God. You know what it is? I mean, it's almost like when you want to get the first row of a concert.
Yeah.
And people are on the phone and they want to get that ticket. And, you know, I've talked to so many people about this, you know, and I mean, even when I think about the grooming shows in America. Now in England, I don't have a cutoff point. I mean, and to be fair, there's positives and negatives into that because even if you were to have like my workshop class, for instance, my workshop class at one of my shows, I had 103 dogs. And I had to then separate the workshop into wall-coded workshop or purebred workshop and mixed breed workshop because to me it didn't seem possible or how can you pick 1, 2, and 3 out of all them dogs? It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's over 3 divisions. So the only thing you could do to really do it so you could open up more spots is obviously to make your ring bigger. But then again, it's a real, real hard one because, see, back in the day, you know, when you walked into a ballroom, the ring was one massive square in the middle and there was all the trade stands around it. Now, a lot of the shows are very much trade show and grooming competition as an add-on. And believe me, I get it. And I'm not saying, I would never say anything negative. I think the shows in America are amazing. I love going to Hershey. Mm-hmm. My God, I think Hershey is an incredible show. And what they do to that show and the organization, what goes into it, I cannot even imagine. However, I look at it and I'm thinking, okay, so, you know, what could you do to make, you know, so you could open up more competition? And the only way to do that is obviously to, you know, whether you was to put less seating area for people to watch the competition, bring the ring out so you can put more chairs and put more tables in the ring. But you know what? I'm not too sure. And, you know, I don't know. It's a hard one because, you know, and it always happens mainly with your A division class people, your groom team USA people. Obviously, they want to get their dogs in. And I've even heard people buying slots even, you know, before they've even got the dog.
Oh, wow.
Because they want to make sure they can get in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I just hope that, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I hope they do think about everybody, and because you have to think about everybody, because if you don't, people aren't going to bother competing, and you have to really, really push your entry level and your intermediate level so they continuously compete. Because if you notice, and I notice this a lot when I do my shows over here anyway, my beginner class and my intermediate are full. My A division, which are your A-listers, there's very little. Sometimes there's so much less people in that class than what there is in your other classes, in your intermediate and beginners. And I don't know if it's because people are scared of moving up, or when they get to that point, they're like, okay, forget this. I'm not going to beat this person, so why bother?
Right.
But, you know, and there is that, but I will say this. You know, the people that are hard to beat are hard to beat because they work their asses off, or they work their butts off. Excuse me. I told you I wasn't going to swear. And, that's what we need to swear. But, you know, so, but what I would tell them people is you have to work as hard as that person that you want to be. And you know what? The education there is out there these days is absolutely incredible. You know, if you can get a chance to go see Lindsay Dickin, or you can go see Pina, or, I mean, all these people, there is, and I don't want to even mention names because there's too many. And if I miss out one, I feel bad.
Right.
But there is so many people you can learn from in America, and these are people at the top of their game, because Groom Team USA, they're a hard team to beat, and they're some amazing groomers. So, you know, you really, I mean, I know when it comes to, you know, when it comes to judging the teams, if I'm judging a team competition, or if I'm talking to other countries, I tell them you need to keep up with American groomers to see who's on the team, what they're doing, and, you know, just follow these people, and you know, and hey, if you want to learn, send them a message. That half of them do one-to-one training, and you can only get better. And I think it's you know, people do get intimidated though, and you know what, I will say this, people make it so people get intimidated, because you can let you know, and I'm not saying it in a negative way, because we all have egos. Even I have an ego. We all have egos. And I think sometimes egos get in the way sometimes, and it prevents people from wanting to come up and approach you. I mean, people have not approached me because they thought, you know, oh, how can I talk to him? I'm thinking, oh, for God's sake, get over here and talk to me, for goodness sake. I'm a person. You know, I'm very easy to talk to.
Mm-hmm. I'll attest to that. I met you in the Orlando show, back in, I guess it would have been 2018. And then we met briefly, and then I saw you at Hershey, and I immediately bought you a beer, just because I you're that type of person. See, I'm at an advantage. I'm kind of on the outside looking in. I'm not a groomer yet.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm able to see things differently. So I do kind of treat people like they're a human being. Whereas my wife does really get intimidated sometimes still, by people that she's been looking up to for years.
Oh, bless her. Well, you know what? I mean, you know, just tell her to go up and talk to people. And you know what? If a person is standoffish, then you know what? I mean, I always say, you know what, maybe they're having a bad day, or maybe they are just like that, and I won't bother no more. And you know, and basically it's just one of them, you know, elimination things where you just have to realize that not everybody is for everybody. And you know what, you will find, and you know, some of the best groomers in the world can have, you know, you're thinking, oh my God, I, you know, I really want to, you know, learn from this person and all this kind of stuff. And you kind of talk to them, and you know, I sometimes wouldn't rather not talk to them at all, because I don't want to be disappointed. You know, like if I ever met Madonna and she was really horrible to me, which she probably would be, I'd be so devastated.
Right.
You know,
completely understand.
So you kind of, And you kind of don't want that because you look up to that person.
Right.
But I will say this, when it comes to people like, you know, because I've worked with Pina and I've worked, I haven't worked with Lindsay, but I've been around Lindsay and, you know, and all these people. And you know what? Once you get through the cut through the bull and all that, and you and I mean, with me, I'm like, look, guys, you know, this is dog grooming at the end of the day. You know, I'm a pet groomer before I'm anything. Before I'm a competition groomer, before anything, I'm a pet groomer and I'm an educator and I want to see people do well in anything they choose to do, even outside of dog grooming. Whatever it is, go for it, because I think it's really, really important. And also, that taught the reason why I believe I became so competitive is because America is very competitive. Now, if you look at England, when I was at school in England, we have Sports Day, okay? And Sports Day is consisted of the egg and spoon race, okay? They do it so, oh, it's terrible. And now they don't even do Sports Day because they don't want kids to feel like they can't do things. Oh. Where I learned very quick in America when I used to take my friends' kids to softball practice or to football practice or to cheerleading practice. But you know what? You go there and you go there to win. And now, do I believe that you should say to your kid, don't you come back it unless it's a gold? No, but I do believe in encouraging your children to be winners, as long as you also don't treat them differently if they are not a winner, if you understand where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? So when I used to take my friends' kids, I mean, and all my friends in America with their kids, they would always be, you know what, it's okay, to not bring home the gold, but do try. Where in England, we have this attitude where it's not about winning, it's about taking part.
Did you win the egg race, Colin?
I won the egg race. Yeah, I did. And not because the egg was stuck to the spoon either. I actually legit won it because I had, you know, this format of using my brain and to really concentrate on that spoon and that egg. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So I agree with you 100% on what you just said as far as approaching people, and breaking that barrier is definitely the first step. Do you think that there would ever be consideration of a level beyond open? So for example, if maybe you're in the open division and you win 3 first place finishes, that maybe you move on, or
okay,
so you're retired, yeah, well, or.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, see, that's a very. Very good question. There is a friend of mine called Melanie Winters Holmes, and she went to school with me, and she has come up with a program. So I mean, you know, if anybody would like to do the program, and I personally would love to bring the program to America, and basically it's called the Golden Scissor Award. So basically how it would work is, let's just take let's take Lindsay Dickin for an example. So Lindsay Dickin starts off in entry level. She wins 3 first place and she's got 3 golden scissor awards. So you give her a plaque with the 3 golden scissors. Then she has to move up to intermediate and with a Bichon too, and that's fine. And then she goes to intermediate, then she wins another 3 first places with that. So then she's won her 3 golden scissors in intermediate. And then she goes to open against, you know, against the bigwigs. If she wins 3 first place in open, she either has to retire, she has to retire and not come back into that ring. Or if she wants to, she has to come back in the ring, but with not a Bichon.
Gotcha.
So, and then, And then also, if she wants to compete with the Bichon, then there would be the Supreme class. You know what I mean? So you could call it, and you know, so the Supreme class is your, you know, these are the people that have got to the top of their game. They are, they, you know, and once they've gone, you know, and if Lindsay comes back into the A division with a Bichon, with a Kerry Blue, with a soft coated wheat, and she's done all the breeds she can think about, then she retires. But you know, it gets to a point where, you know, a lot of people say that people should retire, and I sit on the fence with this one, because it's like, okay, do I think they should retire? A part of me says yes. Do I think if you know you have a chance of going to a competition and having an 85% chance of getting best in show and taking home $5,000, yes, I also think you should be able to do that. But I do believe in the event of, you know what, we have to keep on, you know, keep moving this cattle. Come on, let's keep moving, guys. Because if we stay in one place and keep on doing it, it will be, you know, then there will be no chance for entry level to move up. And even if they were to move up, they're not going to get a place because they're not on the phone quick enough to get a ticket.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking about this at Atlanta Pet Fair, just because my mind's always thinking, you know, you and I talk quite a bit, and, you know, we're always kind of thinking of unique ways to change the industry for the better and things like that. And, you know, I was even thinking, you will take Lindsay as the example. And so she wins her three first places in Open. And then she has the option to either, like you said, go to the next class, which would be Supreme, or she can be asked to be a judge for that breed. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously she knows what she's doing, so she should be able to judge at that point.
You know what? You know what? She is, horribly incredible at everything she does, where, you know, makes me sick. I just want to slap her, because she's really, really good. If you give her a stuffed dog, she turns it into a friggin' horse and all that kind of stuff, and you're thinking, Jesus, Lindsay, you know what? And I think she would make an incredible teacher, and I think she'd make an incredible judge. And also, I've never seen her, maybe she goes back to a hotel room and maybe she grabs that pillow on that bed and beats the crap out of it, but I've never seen her be disrespectful to a judge, or at least she's never been and she hasn't ever done it to me. So she's also, I've always seen her to have good sportsmanship, and that's really important. But yeah, I think they're, should come a time where you're thinking, okay, come on. I mean, and it's, in my opinion, you're always better off to quit a winner, because you're always remembered for your last win. And if you're, you know, you don't ever want to be remembered for your last loss, if you understand.
Yeah, and I don't think that they would want to ever have that word quit next to them. But definitely the next stage, I guess you could say, you know, just the next stage of their grooming career. I don't even think that they would like to hear the word retired, because, you know, they put so much effort into that breed. That's the last thing that they want to do is like, oh, I can't do this anymore. But so now,
let's face it, we've heard Cher say it for many, many years, and she always comes back with a comeback tour. It's like, for God's sake, I'm gonna retire. I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. And then before you know it, they've come back again with another concert. So I think it's a very passionate thing. And I think when you're artistic and you're creative, and you then, okay, this news, this lockdown, for an example, you know what? This lockdown has been crazy because we're all stuck in our houses and we can't do things. And before the lockdown, we were all complaining because, oh my God, there's too many shows and we're too busy and we're flying here, flying there. And now we're in a situation when we're not doing nothing. And now we're complaining about that because we miss the shows and we miss the networking and we miss the competitions, which I personally do. I love being around people and talking and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it's one of them things where when people do retire from a competition, they do retire and they enjoy it. And then they get that itch where they're thinking, God damn it, I really want to get back in that ring again.
Right, right.
You know.
What do you enjoy more, or what have you enjoyed more, being a groomer, a judge, or a speaker?
I guess I enjoy being, I enjoy being a speaker because I enjoy seeing light bulbs go off. I enjoy seeing people change, not necessarily to how I've told them, but how people have changed and improved and made more money or got more confidence, because confidence is a huge thing, which I really do try to talk about, and anxiety and all that kind of stuff, because the industry is full of it. So I love seeing people grow, and I love seeing people deal with their demons and all that kind of stuff. So I guess the education side of it, definitely.
Gotcha. And then I'm going to start going into some of these fun questions a little bit here and there, and then that might lead us into something else. But what's your favorite country that you've been to? I know that you really enjoyed Hong Kong. What's another country that you've really enjoyed going to?
I love Germany. I love Australia, obviously. I love Australia. I love Germany. When it comes to America, my God, I've been to so many states. I love Seattle. I love Savannah, Georgia. I love Florida. There's so many. And you know what? From every place I go to, there's something which I love about it, and, you know, and sometimes not love about it, but I always see the beauty wherever I go. So it's a really, really tough question.
That's great. So what is your favorite grooming competition? I know that you mentioned Hershey.
I love Hershey. I would, you know what? I would have to say, you know, from the get-go, the All-American Grooming Show was probably, it was my very first big show. I loved Jerry Schimberg. I loved what he brought to the industry. but nowadays, I would have to say, I love Hershey. I love the atmosphere. I love the buzz from it. I love the education side of it. They got so much. They have everything going on. I don't know. Obviously they have an amazing team which does all this. But saying that, I would have to say Shirley Cowstone. When Shirley Cowstone had Intergroom, oh my God, it was absolutely magical. There was one time at the dinner party, she had people on stilt circus performers walking around. Shirley Cowstone really put on an awesome show also. So once again, it's a tough question, but I would have to say Intergroom, the All-American Show, and Hershey.
Yeah, I'm actually slated to have Todd Shelley on the show here soon. So I'm going to really be picking his brain as far as picking locations and, you know, setting up all the behind the scenes stuff for Barkley. So that should be an interesting conversation.
He probably does nothing. He walks around making sure everybody's doing their, no, he does make me laugh. And you know what? Todd Shelley is doing an incredible job. And, you know, back in the day when I used to go to Hershey, was when Sally Lillick and Gwen was actually, you know, they were at the forefront of that show. And you know what? Sally would come around and throw candy at everybody. Of course, I'll be right there with candy. And she was, she's amazing. That's why we have the Sally break. She was all about the comfort of the dogs. She was all about making sure things were done properly. And you know what? Gwen and Todd and Barkley have carried on with them traditions. And it's still an incredible show. And what I love about Hershey, not only do I love the location, not only do I love the hotel and the show, but I love the fact that I've seen the same employees doing the same job for about 15 years now, for the actual hotel. The hotel employees I'm talking about. I mean, you know, it's just it's a great show, and I get to go there. I always fly into Philadelphia. I spend time with Sally Hawkes, who's like a sister of mine. She's like a sister to me. And, you know, she tries to make me hand strip Sealy Ham Terriers. I'm like, hell no, that's crazy. And then we get in a car and we drive to Hershey. It's a beautiful drive going through the Amish country. And so, yeah, I mean, it's one of the shows I really get excited for every single year.
Yeah, I don't know Todd too personally, but, you know, and I've already joked around with him that I'm going to make him busier at the next show. We're just going to strap a suggestion box around his neck.
Absolutely. Or just attach a GoPro to his forehead so we can actually see where he goes and what he does.
So I'm going to ask you a tough question now. So I know that PetQuest is coming up here in June. That's probably a little too early to kind of predict that. Do you think that we will have a trade show for Hershey this upcoming year with what's going on?
Oh, you know what? I really, really would love and say to hope so. I mean, I would love to say yes. Do I think they're going to have lots and lots of rules for social distancing? I know in England for a fact, but no shows are going on this year. I have my huge conference in October and I've rescheduled that because of, not of the fact of, because October's a long way away, but the problem that I have is, am I going to be able to sell tickets from now till then? Will people have the money? Will people travel? Will people have too much anxiety to want to come out and be in crowds? And will hotels and big venues still be allowed to have a maximum of, you know, so many people at their show? Do I hope it goes ahead? I'd love it to, and I'd love to be there myself. And but when it comes to PetQuest, what, PetQuest is in June?
Yes, middle of June.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to be fair, I think we have to just leave it in the hands of what the government suggests and of that state, and see what they say and then go from there. But I mean, you know, I would love everything to get back to normal because, you know, I think we all need to financially get back into some kind of normality. But I think, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of things what we're going to see. I was talking to Melissa McPlank 2 days ago on the phone, and she says, even though, you know, when it comes to teaching or when it comes to schooling, you know, she doesn't even know how long it's going to be until schools can go back to normal.
Well, you know, I'm a full-time teacher right now. And, well, I have been for over 18 years. And so, you know, I do the virtual teaching right now. And it is what it is. But they are talking about not even having school possibly next year just because of the social distancing. So I don't know where that's going to go. And of course, like you said earlier, we have two small children of our own, and the daycare has actually been open this whole time because they're considered essential. It's a really well run daycare. Mm-hmm. So they definitely clean and sanitize and everything, but you know, being the protective parents that we are, we're not sure if we could even send them back when we're financially ready to. So,
yeah. You know, it's a real toughie because I mean, at the end of the day, you know what, everybody loses out, and you know what, it's like, but I mean, the one comfort, and it's not a good comfort, but the one comfort is we are all in the same boat. You know what, nobody is making, you know, the money they're accustomed to making. Right. I was talking to the company in England that makes my combs, and you know what, I placed a small order with him, and I could tell in his voice how grateful he was because he's an exporter. So he exports to people all around the world for dog shows. And of course there's no dog shows. So he makes no money. I'm not saying just him, because there's thousands of companies in the same boat. So, I do wonder about Hershey, whether it will go ahead this year, and I think about Hershey because it is a standalone, huge, huge show.
Are we at that point, you think, to where we need to, as an industry, possibly look into a virtual competition, at least for the groomers, and in terms of being actually like judged to where it counts for points?
Well, you know what Altero did, the lockdown competition, which was, I think, was last week, and I saw a little bit of it. I mean, I don't know, to be fair, whether. I mean, towards points. I mean, that's a good question. It's actually getting. It takes away the fact of combing the dog.
Correct. Yep. Seeing if there's any mats in certain spots. Correct.
Absolutely. So, I mean, do I think there could be a virtual trade show? Absolutely. How that will be done, I have no clue. Whether it be where people join a big Zoom group, I guess, and you know, and different companies can talk about what they're selling and stuff like that. I mean, surprisingly enough, you know, groomers are still spending money, and which amazes me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they still do have money to spend, and in England, to be fair, nobody has ever said groomers cannot work. Groomers have just chosen not to work because of the rules and regulations they put into place, where you can only groom one dog at a time, you can only do this, you've got to sanitize in between each grooms, which it does make me wonder, because sanitizing between each grooms is something that we should have been doing all the time anyway.
Right.
And you know, so I don't know, it's a real toughie, because you know, all I mean, I sometimes wonder, you know, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but I'm thinking, maybe has it been blown out of proportion? No, because I see the amount of people that are dying, you know, and I mean, so I'm not taking nothing lightly at all. I mean, Coleman does all the grocery shopping, and, you know, I mean, you know, so you've even got to worry about that, because you go grocery shopping, people are going crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, right before this started, I mean, my God, with the toilet paper and then the rice and all this kind of stuff. And so I think for sure what will happen, definitely, people will start having a pantry. Do you call them pantries in America?
Well, yeah, just keeping stock, keeping extra stock.
Yeah, exactly. So I know at Coleman's house in Seattle, you know, they have this around the kitchen, they got a massive pantry, and it's got, you know, lots and lots of like pasta, rice, all that kind of things in there. So I think people would definitely be doing a lot more of that. So whenever, if we were to get a second wave of this or anything else, people will have, you know, room, you know, a certain room in their house where they do keep a lot of stock.
Yeah.
Terry DiMarino will have definitely a wine cellar.
I think, listen, and I really hope that this goes away soon. I just, the logistical side of it, I mean, we just opened up our beaches again for some stupid reason in Southwest Florida. I don't know why. So do I think it's going to go away anytime soon? Unfortunately, I don't. But I think for sure everything's going to change. It's like now when I watch a movie with my wife, I'm watching people that are like in the movie that are holding the handrail of a subway. And I'm like, no one's going to be doing that anymore.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
All these things that we should have done beforehand anyways, such as washing our hands on a normal basis, I think people are at least going to be more cognizant of doing that, which is a very good thing.
Yeah. I think people will start wearing more. I think people will start wearing masks more. I mean, you know, I mean, we've seen countries where masks for many, many years.
Ironically, China was probably the most proficient in that. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's like, you know, so you do wonder. But I mean, all we can hope is, if it was to, you know, miraculously go away like as fast as it came, which I can't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but who knows? I mean, I can only hope. But there will be, you know, a show to go to. It's like my friend called me the other day because I have master groom, and I've bought that back, and I've got the date for September. And I'm thinking, you know, they said you're still going to do it because people are going to want to compete. And I'm like, that's fine and dandy, but you have to think about, first of all, I'm not just going to put on a show because people want to compete. Mm-hmm. People have to be safe, and things cost money. And I would rather not do a show at all than do something just, just because last minute, you know?
Right. No, you're saying all the right things, and I know that you're following all the right things. So thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, no problem.
What, a couple more questions here, and then we'll wrap this up. It's just been such a easy, free conversation. I could talk to you all night, but let's talk a little about, you mentioned the combs. Let's go into some of the inventions that you've put out into the industry that you're really proud of. But go ahead. I'll let you speak on your own behalf.
Okay, so, first of all, when it comes to the combs, you know, the combs is something that, you know, I mean, I have a lot of passion about lots and lots of equipment when it comes to, you know, belly straps. I mean, belly straps wasn't an invention of mine, but I saw a product that was laying dormant, and I guess I brought it back to life again, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. It was one of them things where, you know, there's lots of products out there which, you know, you look at and you're thinking, my God, you know, this is just sitting on the shelf doing absolutely nothing because nobody's promoting it, and or it's just become obsolete, so to speak. And and so I thought with the belly strap, I wanted to make some changes with it. I wanted to do it so it's more comfortable. So I just did the changes. And luckily, I've got a factory down the road from me who's a small family-run business, which I'm really happy to support. And I gave them what I want. I kind of make things out of cardboard and duct tape. And I'm like, this is what I want. I want it out of material. And they look at me like, oh, my God. And so so that, you know, that came about. And then the comb, you know what, it just come to me when it comes to the comb. And, you know, I was sitting at the grooming table and I had the comb, and I when you hold a comb with both hands and you got your thumbs in the middle.
Yep.
And I was going back and forth with the comb. And then I was looking at it and I was just saying to myself, you know what, why are combs straight? And not to say that they shouldn't be, because combs have been straight for absolutely decades and decades, and people have done an amazing job with them. But I wanted to try it and see how it would work. So I just bent a cheap comb, really, and just played around with it. And then I decided to try it for real for like 6 months, and I wanted to make sure that it wasn't a gimmick and it wasn't a fad, because, you know, there are things out there you're thinking, oh, that won't last long. And to be fair and to be honest, I do not know why bowed combs, well, there's lots of people that sell bowed combs now, but I didn't understand why bowed combs weren't made a long, 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 long time ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, when it comes to that, so that's why, you know, I want it to be a certain way or a certain bow in it. And I did it where they were overbowed, then I did it where they were had a slight bow. And it just went from there. And then I debuted them. Oh, God, was it last? No, it was 2 years ago I debuted them at Crufts. And they absolutely went crazy. I mean, just went mad over them. And there was the typical people, you probably get it too. They come by and they pick up a pair of shears and they clank them in their hands like, no, don't like them. And I'm thinking, well, that's because you don't know. You know, you have to hold something properly and treat it with respect and think, mm-hmm. and then you'll understand the science behind it. So the science behind the bowie is basically, you know, you're covering more ground with less strokes with a comb. Right. I mean, I teach people to comb every probably 30 seconds. So with the bowie, you're going around corners, you're lifting out more hair, you're going with the contour of the body. With lots of dogs, you want to create spring of rib, so the bowie actually is shaped as a spring of rib. there's lots and lots of things it does. And so, you know, and, you know, there was that. And then I remember years ago, I still have an organizer bag, which I had made in America, but the bag was made by a guy who makes army bags and camera bags in Philadelphia. So they was costing me a fortune to make. And actually what I'll do is I'll send you a photo of it.
Okay.
Because you might be able to help me with this.
All right.
And I would love to bring it back, but change it up a little bit, because I, you know, in this bag, it can be condensed a little bit more, so it's a little bit smaller. But you know, it's, you know, I think with certain things, you know, and also when it comes to wanting to support, you know, your country's products and all that kind of thing. However, I will say this, you know what, when it comes to buying products from China or from Pakistan, whatever like that, there's not to say that they don't have good products at all. Because, I mean, for me to have some products made in England, it costs me 3 times the amount it would cost me to have it made in Pakistan or China. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to go through the avenues and find the right person who also can give you a quality product.
That's definitely the key, for sure. I know when we first started Loyalty Pet Products, it was just, I probably just wasted, and I literally mean wasted, about $5,000 just getting prototypes, because I needed to find the right thing that not only my wife, you know, liked, but actually was functional for a while. Just like you said, you were testing the combs for 6 months. I didn't want her to like something and then a week later say, hey, these stopped cutting. So, but once you find the right person and the right relationship and you feel good about that person as an individual, then you're onto something right there. But trust me, and you know, you and I were commenting back and forth on a Facebook post that I've tried to look, you know, American made, and unfortunately it's a lot more expensive, and the quality, it's on par with what we already have. So unless there's a product that we will come out with at some point that definitely I can go the American way, it's not as easy as just saying, hey, we're made in America. I'm making 50 cents on this. You know, we have to function as a business. There's economics.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think people understand that. And I think the way that you can get around that is, you know what, it doesn't matter where it's made, as long as you as a business give the customer incredible backup service, mm-hmm. and customer service, then it shouldn't matter where it's made, as long as the product is good.
Yeah, I will say, when we first started out, that was a big problem, where the products are made. Now that we've kind of established our customer service base and everything, we don't get those questions hardly as often, so...
Yeah.
Couple more questions and then I'm going to set you free, sir.
Okay.
What's your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Oh, my favorite. Well, I would say if I was in America, I would probably get a Washington apple. I like Crown Royal. I'm not a big wine fan. My partner likes wine, but I've never been a big wine fan. But then again, I'm not, to be honest, I'm not a big drinker at all. I could probably, well, if you would ask Coleman how many times has he seen me drunk in 8 years, I think he's seen me drunk once.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm
not
the same
a big
way.
Drinker.
If you and I are sitting around and someone's got a deck of cards, I'm probably going to be drinking that night. I don't just grab a beer just for whatever, and I'm the same way. I'm in the same boat. What is actually in a Washington apple?
Washington apple is Crown Royal, apple pucker, a little bit of sour, and then Coke.
All right, I'm putting that on my list.
It's really good. Well, if Hershey goes ahead this year, then we're sitting have a
you got
Washington
it.
Apple.
You
but
got it.
I have to make sure I got enough money because they're expensive at that Hershey Lodge. Actually, what we'll do is we'll tell Todd can buy me and you a Washington Apple. How's that go? So when you talk to Todd, you tell him that.
We'll put it in his suggestion box.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is, this is kind of, it could be a long-winded answer. It could be a very short one, but what is your best advice for someone that is wanting to compete for the first time?
Okay. If you're wanting to compete for the first time, first of all, find a dog that you enjoy grooming. It doesn't matter if it's not perfect or perfected yet. Just find the dog that you enjoy grooming, and take that dog to the competition. Make sure you get feedback, and not just feedback from the judge, but try and get as much feedback from other judges that are judging that show. But always take your judge's feedback on board first, obviously. And you know what? And just remember, but you'll probably learn more from not placing than what you will from placing. And even if you place, get feedback, because you could have done an amazing job, or you could have done, you know, it could have been a class where they were just picking. I know this sounds terrible, me saying this, but you could be just, you know, pulling three dogs out of a class that isn't very strong. So even when you place first, still get feedback.
Right.
And you know what? And don't ever give up. You know, go to breeders. Let's just say you want to groom a poodle, for instance, and you have a bunch of poodle breeders in your area. Go to them, approach them, say, look, you know what? I'll come and I'll bathe your old retired poodles if I can practice on them. You know what? I was lucky. I had Sharon Meir in Michigan who took me under her wing, and she taught me how to perfect the Bedlington Terrier. But I went there to her kennel every single Sunday, and I bathed all her dogs for her. But I don't ever regret that, because I learned so much. So if you want to compete, first thing I would say is go to the competition and watch, okay? And talk to people. Talk to people after they've competed, not before. Let them chill a little bit after, then talk to them. Then, you know, find a competition, you know, that you feel comfortable with. And like I said, the dog, you have to find a great dog, and not only one dog. If you're going to find a good poodle, find two good poodles, because one may cancel last minute, or it could be matted, or the owner could decide to give it a haircut. But when you find that good dog, maybe do it once every 2 weeks. And what I tell people, and I'll make this short as possible, when you groom your competition dog, you wash it, you dry it, you groom it, you style it. After you're done styling it, you put it back in the bathtub, you dry it again, and then any little hair that sticks out, then you perfect it that way. So I would do my dogs twice. I would style them twice. And then when that dog grows out, within 6 weeks of growth, you have a perfectly grown out dog with no blemishes at all on them, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's excellent advice. It's definitely a great starting point. And the last question for you, sir, for just pretend that what's going on right now with this pandemic was not going on right now. What are you most excited about for the future of the grooming industry?
I'm really excited about Pooch Perfect, and I'm excited that it's becoming putting dog grooming into a positive light on TV for everybody in Australia, in England this year. They're going to be filming in August, and hopefully in America. I think it's going to be good to finally have the general public realize that what we do is an art form. So I think that's what I'm really excited about. But also I'm excited because there's endless education out there for people now. There's no excuse for people to say they haven't got a seminar in their area, because there's plenty. And once again, when it comes to seminars, you know what? Go to them, go there with an open mind. Even if you learn tiny little things, then you haven't wasted your money.
Excellent. Colin Taylor, thank you so much. When you and Coleman, when we have a chance, You guys are welcome to come to our Florida home and stay with us. We'd love to have you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Absolutely.
What part of Florida are you in?
We're in Southwest Florida, so we're close to Fort Myers.
Okay, I know. Yep, that's good.
Yep, and we got Wonderful. 5 acres, so you guys can bring the dogs, and you guys will all be set, and we'll have a Washington apple on Todd Shelley.
Awesome. That sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Colin, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We appreciate all of you out there who are following and enjoying the podcast. If you could leave a glowing review for Grooming Unleashed, it would mean a lot to us, as well as sharing with your grooming friends, coworkers, bosses, and anyone else in the industry. It would mean a lot. It also would mean a lot if you would visit our sponsor, Loyalty Pet Products, at www.loyaltypetproducts.com. And don't forget, you can use the code UNLEASHED to save 10% off of your next order. Thank you very much for our sponsorship, Loyalty Pet Products, and thank you to all of you guys who are listening to us at Grooming Unleashed. We appreciate you and your support.